of this session, I have the opportunity to present to you a very courageous gentleman. And he's obviously courageous when you look at the topic that he has selected. He's willing to talk about and share with you those techniques that he has used very successfully in upward influencing a number of bosses. He's had four promotions since going to the University of Miami, Coral Gables, in 1977. So obviously he's worked very well on four different supervisors. I'm not sure whether that's the topic of what he's going to tell you is how to improve your career through upward influencing or how to get the job done. But in any event, he's done both very effectively. He's also, in that upward influencing, he is the Vice President for University Relations at the University of Miami. And he's also worked very hard in CASE and worked hard for his and our profession. And has come up through a whole variety of chairs at CASE. He's been active in the Women and Minorities Forum. And now, as you learned this morning, he is chair-elect for CASE. And just an absolutely tremendous honor and well-deserved. He has his law degree, which I'm sure has been very helpful to him in our profession. He obviously has valuable knowledge and information to share with you on how to manage your boss. And if I were his boss, I'd be keeping an eye out. Now, if he could put you in that same position, you'll be in great shape. We call him Russ, but it's Cyrus Jolivet.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Good morning, everyone. Let's see if we can I can get this thing arranged. And well, can't manage a microphone. I'd like to, before we start, take just a quick audience survey just to know, because we are in CASE such a diversified group. How many are from two-year institutions? Quick thing. Four-year institutions? Ooh, okay. Independent schools. Ah, we're all here. Publics, privates. Okay. And I assume that all functional areas within CASE are represented. We cover alumni, EFR, institutional relations, and hitting everyone there, periodicals, publications. Everybody. That's great. That's great. How long have you been in the business? How many of you have been in less than 5 years? Newcomers? Okay, 5 to 10, 10 plus. And everyone here is already an expert in managing their bosses, obviously, because how else would you have spent a week in Washington? How else? Well, we'll see. I can tell that you're working very hard at it, otherwise your bosses would not have permitted you to spend this week at the assembly. But perhaps we can do something to put all of this into a little better context of working smart. And I'll ask my colleague Harry if he will lower the lights and flip the switch on the projector, and we can start talking about it as we look at this thing. We're really talking about, you move it side forward, Harry.
Forward?
Yes. Try it again. No, light bulb, the light switch. It's a slide switch on the side of the machine. There we go. Let's back up a minute, a little bit, and there we are. Okay, we're talking about really in managing our bosses, we're talking about working smart. And every day we get up and go to our institutions, to our offices, and we tackle our work. And we really have to work smart if we're going to take care of our responsibilities. And working smart is really the art of upward influencing. And those two things are terms of art. But the bottom line, what we're really talking about when we do this is how to manage your boss. But you can't go around saying that, and I certainly don't. And there's nothing really deceptive about any of this. But It's a necessary technique that we do it. Many talented people think that ability alone is sufficient for success. I don't think that's really true. Certainly, ability is important, but supplementing one's ability with strong allegiances is needed. It's a real must. Managing your boss or managing upwards or upwards influencing is a legitimate and important aspect of career advancement. I believe in that firmly. Our ability to establish and maintain a mutually valuable relationship with a boss is and will continue to be a major factor in determining our success or our failures at our institutions. Now, it's very important that I mention here to you that I'm not talking about dominating or deceiving your bosses, but managing them. I'm not talking about being a yes man, a yes person, if you will. By managing your boss, I mean understanding yourself and your boss in such a way that you are able to develop a mutually cooperative relationship. The chances are that if you don't take the initiative to do this, no one else will. Just face it, your boss doesn't have to make the relationship work. It really doesn't matter to him. He's the boss. He can get someone else to replace you if he does not like your work. It's simple. You must relate to her. This reminds me of a bumper sticker I once saw that said, if the people lead, eventually the leaders will follow. If you take the lead in starting a cooperative relationship with your boss, maybe eventually he will follow suit and reciprocate. Illustrative of this point is a story that a personnel director of a large Midwestern corporation tells about a highly educated young employee, much better educated than her supervisor, who thought she knew more about their business than her boss. By her daily actions, her condescending attitude in meetings which both attended, she constantly gave messages to the boss and her peers that she was better. That relationship only lasted 5 months. She was fired. So my purpose here today is not to create an us versus them or get them before they get us attitude. To the contrary, because that attitude can only create more problems. I want to help you create a sense of trust and genuine cooperation between you and your supervisor. I hope that by doing that, you will increase your sphere of influence and visibility while helping your boss achieve his goals. Now, we should get to the bottom line. Consider the following reasons why it is so important to manage your boss. First of all, one of the biggest problems organizations face is the superior-subordinate relationship. Second, bosses evaluate performance and are strategic to advancement. Your boss can either promote you, hold you back, or fire you. Third, bosses have more potential for causing employee dissatisfaction than for causing satisfaction. According to a study done among several hundred Air Force officers, the actions of superior officers were responsible for causing a good day on the job about 33% of the time, while their actions were responsible for causing a bad day on the job about 56% of the time. Since this discussion concerns managing bosses, I won't spend any time discussing what supervisors can do to make their employees happy. Certainly, bosses do have that responsibility too. But the first responsibility rests with the employee to create a productive, mutually beneficial relationship. I'll discuss several practical ways you can manage your boss. As you will see, most of my guidelines are common sense approaches. One thing I ask is that you be willing to give up some of your present notions and negative feelings toward your boss. Those old notions and feelings could prevent you from effectively managing your supervisor. I remember once hearing about a man who was walking around the circus tent. In the tent, he saw a huge elephant that was tied to a small wooden stake with a very, very thin rope. And given the comparative sizes, we're talking some simple wrapping twine as opposed to some type of restraining material. This guy was worried about it, and he felt it was a dangerous condition, and he took the chance he had to speak with an attendant, a circus attendant. And he inquired whether or not it wasn't dangerous attempting to restrain that elephant with by such means, just that small stake and that thin rope. And the attendant smiled and replied to him that when the elephant was an infant, it had been chained to a concrete pillar for years. That had broken the elephant from trying to pull away. And now the elephant never bothered to test his restraints. He had grown accustomed to not being able to pull away. We, in a way, are like that elephant. We let old notions, ideas, and assumptions and experiences hold us back from trying new things. We've got to be willing to pull away and try new suggestions and new thoughts. So as we begin, it's good to keep in mind four fundamental premises. One, it is as much the responsibility of the managed as it is the manager to create and maintain effective working relationships. The best way to improve your relationship with your boss is to see what you can do, not what you can get your boss to do. Three, on another level, remember that you are your own boss. You are where you are because of the choices you have made, and you will go where you will go because of the choices you have yet to make. And four, we each have a need to contribute and to be purposeful in our work. Remember, how you perceive things is very, very important in life, and this is reflected in your relationship with your boss. Correct and incorrect perceptions are made every day. And basically, in this thing we're talking about, there are two keys to managing your boss: understanding yourself and understanding your boss. And let's talk a minute about understanding yourself. In managing your boss, you've got to have a proper perception of yourself. It isn't necessary to undergo any psychoanalysis, but being able to evaluate yourself objectively is essential. If you never have before, you should sit down with a pad and pen and really determine your strengths and weaknesses. Knowing your strengths, what you do well and what you like to do, and weaknesses, those things that you do not do as well and what you dislike doing, will help you determine how you can best compliment your boss. There are a few questions you should ask, and I'll put a few up on the screen. Am I a self-starter? Do I like working with people? How do I get along with my associates at work, at home, at church? What is most important to me in my work? What do I want out of my job? What is it that I am willing to put into my work? What motivates me? In what kinds of situations am I most effective? Least effective? Am I doing my best at work? What is my career goal? Am I ambitious? Do I wish to succeed so much that I don't care what happens to others? Am I sincere? Such questions can help determine who you are and where you want to go. Answering these questions very honestly is very difficult. Another method to get a good evaluation of yourself is to ask your best friend or spouse or parent to answer the above questions about you openly and honestly. The foundation is understanding yourself, and once you have done that and evaluated yourself, the next step is to understand the boss. You really need to have an unbiased opinion about your boss. Try not to let personal feelings, pro or con, cloud how that boss really is. And the best way to do this is simply by putting yourself in your boss's shoes. You need to determine strengths and weaknesses. Then ask yourself, what does my boss have to do? What is the boss's boss like? What pressures does my boss have to experience every day? What risks does he or she take? Is she successful? Consider the development officer who had a rather good working relationship with her director of development, except around the time of the annual meeting of the Board of Trustees. 2 or 3 weeks before the annual meeting, her boss had become very irritable, short, authoritative, sometimes even rude. This angered and frustrated her a lot, since she seemed to bear the brunt of his behavior. For several years, she came close to resigning as the time for the institution's annual board meeting approached. But things always seemed to return to their normal even plane after the meeting. Finally, she was determined to understand what brought about this change in her boss. The next year, she managed to become involved in her boss's presentation. At the board meeting, she finally realized what it was her boss went through. 10 to 12 hours a day continually on stage for 2.5 days, meeting formally and informally with trustees, a feeling of pressure, evening sessions and early morning committee meetings. After going through one of these annual board meetings with her boss, she not only understood his change in behavior, but was able to alter her work behavior to not set him off. You've got to find out, too, what makes your boss unique. Is he married? Does he have any children? Where did he grow up, go to school? What are his interests? You may find some commonality. Some point of reference should be found that makes that boss unique. And this can give you and your boss something pleasant to talk about. It's important to understand why a boss behaves as he or she does. I know a director of development at a Western State University who had a reputation for being very strict, really a no-nonsense type. Some even called him mean and miserable. I've done that. Yet one employee on his staff was able to talk with his boss about his background. He found out that his boss had been a Marine in Vietnam, and while there, he had saved several lives after having been shot 3 times. He was a hero and had been through some rough experiences that caused him to be a very serious person. It's interesting that once this background got around the office, the workers' perceptions of their boss changed from him being mean and miserable to being a hero. The people began to work more efficiently as a result. And in time, that DOD began to open up with them more. There were some cooperative and supportive relationships established. Please note here that the employees took that initiative in establishing the relationship. I think, too, you've got to understand your boss's work style, especially if he's new. Some bosses are big with having meetings where everything is openly discussed. Others send memos and letters and expect written replies. Still others may prefer visual reports, such as diagrams and graphs. Find out what style your boss prefers and then use those means. You've just got to be flexible. A new president who was organized and formal in his approach replaced a man who was informal and intuitive. The new president worked best when he had written reports. One of his vice presidents realized this need and worked with the president in a formal, organized way. Before meetings, this astute executive would give written background information and brief suggestions and proposals to his new boss. The president really appreciated this. Another vice president, however, never bothered to notice how organized the new president was in his work style. When meetings approached, he would not submit any written reports. He would simply verbalize his agenda and suggestions. The president would become frustrated and bothered with this executive's portion of major meetings. The only difference between the two executives was neither ability nor adaptability. Rather, it was one executive's sensitivity to his boss's work style. Your boss could be a morning person while you are a night person. He may like conducting early morning meetings. If that's the case, you may need to discipline yourself to awaken earlier and drink a second cup of coffee if necessary. Also, in view of work style, your boss may be extremely busy. Help him out by making every minute count when you need to see him. Get right to your point. Don't digress. Your boss will appreciate and remember your efficiency and directness. A colleague of ours, David Dunlop of Cornell University, recently presented a seminar for development officers at the University of Miami. While his comments were directed toward working with volunteers, the concept can be applied to managing your boss. Time is precious. Organize your meetings with the boss. Have a set agenda in mind, if not written out, depending upon that style. Be flexible, remember that. Always summarize the actions to be taken and either give the summary to your boss as an action checklist or use it to provide yourself with a guide for future meetings. This is not only efficient for you, but it also provides a sense of accomplishment for both you and your boss. Another understanding to have of one's boss comes from psychologist David McClellan. After years of studying managers, he concluded the following. Good managers are not motivated by a need for personal aggrandizement or by a need to get along with subordinates, but rather by a need to influence the behavior of others for the good of the whole organization. Put another way, your responsibility is to recognize the boss's need for power and help him channel it in a way that is both to your and your organization's advantage. Bosses want people to think that they are in control at all times. And to do this, they always need to know what's going on. You can help them know what is going on by gathering information for them. There is nothing worse for a boss than to get information second or third hand. If you encounter information that will benefit your boss, get it to him. This helps your boss, plus it improves your status. You really need to understand your boss's management level and the skills that various levels require. And I have here a skills management level grid that talks about it. And you see that, well, we have some heads there, but I'll read the lower level there. We have lower level managers, mid-level managers, and upper level managers, line supervisors, managers, and executives. And we talk about human skills, the communication skills, getting along with others, and the technical skills and conceptual skills. And you see that as management levels move up, you go more from the technical to the conceptual. And that's exactly what we have to do. And we look at the human skills as those skills that the ability to work, to talk with, and get along with people. And the technical skills being an expertise in some area, such as computers, accounting, engineering. And those conceptual skills at the executive level, that ability to plan, to forecast, and integrate all aspects of organization. So while those human skills remain constant at each level, you see the change in the technical and the conceptual skills. You've really got to realize too, that your boss may not be a leader. There is a difference between being a leader and being a manager. Leaders can be found anywhere in an organization, from the physical plant crew to the president's office. Managers or bosses are supervisors, department heads, administrators, and executives. With that in mind, you should not expect to be led into battle of work by a dashing, heroic, charismatic boss. You may be more of a leader than your boss. That's okay. Just don't overstep the authority that your organization has given your boss. A concluding comment on this topic of understanding your boss is basically, you want to find out how to zig when your boss zags. That is, when you understand your boss with her strengths and weaknesses, you can begin to see how you can complement those strengths and compensate for those weaknesses. With the exception of understanding yourself, there is nothing more important than understanding your boss. According to management specialist Peter Drucker, there is no way around it. There is no mystical way to do it. We all have to learn to work together. The better we learn how to do that, the more efficient will our organizations run, and our opportunities for growth and advancement will increase. Now, we have discussed two keys to managing your boss: understanding yourself and understanding your boss. Now I'd like to make for you and present some miscellaneous but important suggestions. Number one, try never to surprise your boss. If you see a problem coming, let him know in advance. If possible, you should attempt to serve as a buffer zone for your boss. You've really got to deal in solutions, not problems. And I will illustrate this using some people you know well. See, we have, there's Dagwood going to see Mr. Bumstead to make a complaint about his job. And Mr. Bumstead says that he should go to the complaint department, which is the appropriate place that you would register a complaint. And Dagwood, well, despite the fact that he's been in Mr. Bumstead's employ for some time, doesn't know where it is, and he asks, "Where is it?" And Mr. Bumstead responds, without a moment's hesitation, that the complaint department is located in the unemployment office. So if you only approach your boss with problems, after time, you will become associated with trouble in your boss's mind. We all have to take problems to our bosses, yet accompanying those problems with possible solutions will help our bosses. We can't be like Dagwood here. Instead of coming to your boss and saying that the major gift announcement will not appear in the New York Times, and asking him what we should do, you could approach your boss with the problem and a solution, and to let him know that the major gift announcement may not appear in the New York Times, but there are two features in Time and Newsweek about your Nobel professor's research. Let him know that this coverage will enhance your institution's reputation and provide an even better news hook for that major gift announcement. Times comes out every day, remember that. You want to establish, too, a rapport with your boss's assistant or secretary. That person can be one of your greatest assets in managing your boss. This person can let you know when your boss can be approached and when he should be left alone. Any of your boss's quirks or idiosyncrasies can be found out through his assistant. Never embarrass or ridicule your boss so that he loses face. You've got to remember that nations have gone to war in order to save face. Even ridiculing behind the boss's back has a way of filtering back. Be disciplined in this area. You tend to look good if you make your boss look good. You have to place a high premium on loyalty. Disagree if you must, but only in private. A demonstrable show of loyalty is essential. don't ever be involved in backbiting. You've got to find out what your boss hates to do and then volunteer to do it for him. You've got to try to establish an open, dependable, and honest relationship with that boss. It does not happen on the first day of work, but it sure begins there. Honesty is at the heart of good management, management of employees and management of bosses. As one president put it, describing a subordinate, when he's great, he's terrific, but I can't depend upon him. I'd rather he be more consistent, even if he delivered fewer peak successes. At least I could rely on him. You've got to communicate very, very clearly with your boss. And I want to show you why clear communication is so essential. Now, this example comes from the manufacturing end of things, but I think that we can take a look at it and understand in our daily work what we mean. The production manager proposed a swing with three seats. That's pretty good on the tree. And the production request had three ropes in one seat. So we're moving along as we're trying to get this thing manufactured. And research and development did their thing, and communication process went on, and it got installed just this way. And something slipped when it got to manufacturing, and the swing wasn't of too much use. And then we find out how the installers did it. And I think that's a very, very unique solution to the problem. And when we get down to the end, we found out exactly what it was the buyer wanted. Very simple solution to the problem. Obviously, there was a serious communication problem in this organization. So we want to avoid embarrassing our bosses over miscommunication. There's always a need to be creative when there are basic differences between you and your boss, for example. One of my friends I'll call Jim is a superb salesman. Oh, he can sell you anything, let me tell you. Who really has a very, very strong family orientation. His boss felt that Jim should see his clients in the evening, cocktails, dinner, other meetings. Well, Jim really wanted to excel at his job. He was so good at it. But his boss's wishes created a serious inner conflict. After some brainstorming, Jim met with his family and suggested that they all wake up an hour earlier and make breakfast their family meal. He promised not to set any appointments for Tuesday or Friday nights so that his family could be together on those nights. He took this plan to his boss with a promise that if his sales dropped, he would go back to working every night. His boss agreed to the plan, and in time, Jim became the company's number one salesman, ultimately succeeding his boss. So we have really created a pyramid of steps to managing our boss. We've talked about, we talked about how to manage your boss. First, you're understanding yourself. Next, you're understanding your boss, and then by following those miscellaneous suggestions. To really make work for you and to truly manage your boss, you've got to do more than you are being paid to do. A major key in obtaining job satisfaction is to give more than you get. Don't ever seek personal credit for your accomplishments. Attribute successes to your boss. In the long run, you'll get more credit than you probably deserve. As I'm sure you have noticed, managing your boss involves some sacrifice and discipline on your part. Remember, sacrifice and discipline may be painful and difficult, yet they yield great benefits. Just remember what I said before, you've got to be flexible. Your boss may be 100% to blame for the conditions under which you struggle, but you are 100% responsible for how you react to it. Flexibility is the key. So remember, you've got to work smart, you've got to manage upward, and you'll have what I think will be some good luck. You certainly will be rewarded for having mastered the art of upward influencing, and that's exactly what it's all about. And in this room, we'll talk about managing a boss, but outside, we'll talk about the art of upward influencing. And that's the bottom line there. Thank you very much. I'd like to take a moment and give you some, share some resources with you. As I've been tracing this topic over a period of time, It's interesting where I find things about this subject. In the July issue of Esquire, in the strategist, Smart Money, there is a one-pager on how to manage up. It's interesting. There is a very good book out by Christopher Haggerty with Philip Goldberg on how to manage a boss. It's published in 1980. And there have been articles in the Harvard Business Review, and there are some readings in Managing Organizations by Nadler, edited by Nadler, Tushman, and Hatfany. Interesting stuff, and I commend all of these things to you. Thank you very much for coming on the last day of the assembly, almost at 11:59. Any questions, comments?
Okay. Good. Barbara?
I want to thank you very much for your presentation, and I'm sure that we are all very pleased to have all of those tips to use in the future on our own bosses. Thank you, Russ, for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Will this session be taped, do you think?
I don't know, had a misperception that he entered with.
Mm-hmm.
And the first meeting that he had with any of the staff was my supervisor, myself, in which he was extremely hostile, to be frank. One other private meeting I had with him, he was also. Now, he's always pleasant to me in front of people, but I don't trust him. I'm being frank with you.
I understand.
I don't trust him because when we're alone, his tone, everything about it is different. We've had some minor things where I've gone into him about something or he's come to me, and it's always different than he is in public.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think, I'm being frank,
mm-hmm.
at the moment, I'm the president's darling, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I did a project that was really for the president. It started long before he came. It finished up the week he arrived, you know, and it was a huge success. The president loves it, and the president has given me credit even when I'm not present when he shows the video. You know, he'll say, and oh, I wish Irma were here so you could meet her. You know, this sort of thing. And it seems to be driving this man crazy. I think he had wanted credit for it, but he wasn't there, and the president knew it all the time it was being worked on. You know, he came on the 3rd and the 4th, it was done, you know, it was one of those things, and it was a 4 or 5 month project. But my problem is this. I don't know what perception, what anyone told him before he came, but I have a feeling he has me mixed up with the woman who had my position, who left before he came, who was a big problem.
How long has he been going on?
Well, he came in January.
Okay. All right, so it's not far enough down the road, you know, think about. See you at home, Jim.
So, I mean, I'm working under this,
well,
that,
you know,
that
there
I don't
ways,
know what he's thinking about.
There are ways, special project, okay. I mean, I think there are ways of demonstrating. This could be it. You might have to get up on the key. I mean, if he doesn't realize there was a change there. And if you can go back and do a 5-year presentation of activities and things, and then you'll be able to ask for to slip in there when the change occurred and what happened before and then after. And I think you need to make sure you have a clear discussion of goals so that he understands that you are supporting him and have the same goals as the institution. And so that he can understand that you're on his team. He may feel that you're not. Because he may be blaming you. I mean, has he gotten any public recognition from the president?
Probably not. You know, but let's be honest.
Yeah.
So far, what has he done?
Okay, that's it exactly.
He's new here. He's new. He's brand new. He walks through the door.